This is the Frank Beckman Show on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's special guest host, Kathy Hoekstra.
And welcome to this gorgeous Monday morning. As he mentioned, I'm Kathy Hoekstra, taking off the Mackinac Center hat that I normally wear and putting on the WJR hat. What a great hat to have.
You look good, too.
Well, thank you, Dana. And it's so great to see you finally in person.
I know.
And did you have a good Mother's Day?
It was awesome. The weather was great. I didn't cook dinner.
Wow.
And that's a twofer right there.
Now, wait a minute. How'd you get out of doing that? I cooked dinner. I did four loads of laundry.
You did.
But, you know, which is...
A mother's work is never done.
Absolutely.
Never done.
I told my family, I've got two sons, and I said, the only thing I want for Mother's Day, my older son had baseball tournament, and I just want to hit.
Yeah.
Been in a hitting slump.
Did he get it?
Oh, did he ever.
Yes.
Deep, deep left field for a double. It
awesome.
Was great.
Awesome. So that laundry, it equaled out.
Oh, yeah. And then some. I'll take a blast to left field any day of the week.
Good for
him. He got picked off at third, but we won't talk about
that.
That's... Okay.
That's nothing.
Well, super. And I'm sure we'll be talking with you in the next hour, Dana.
Yes, we will. I'll be back later.
All right. Well, coming up on the Frank Beckman Show, superintendent in a small school district, Oscoda Schools, kind of wedged between, Bay City and Alpena, way up there, doing some very innovative things and perhaps off the radar. Well, we're going to get Dr. Christine Beardsley on the radar and talk about some of the great things she's doing. I consider her a visionary in terms of education here in Michigan. And is she joining us right now on the program? All righty. And Dr. Christine Beardsley, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay.
Good morning, Kathy. How are you?
Good morning. I am super. Well, you know, here's a concept, paying a bonus to employees for simply performing their job better or excelling in some measurable way. I mean, quite an incentive and a way to inspire folks to take that extra step and go that extra mile. Well, Dr. Beardsley, some call it merit pay, and that is embraced by some and vehemently opposed by others. A couple of weeks ago, Governor Snyder did lay out his ideas for education reform in Michigan. Among his proposals, a merit pay or other performance-based incentives for teachers, met with harsh reaction from some folks who insist that research shows merit pay doesn't work. But, you know, Dr. Beardsley, try telling that to you. You're a school superintendent up in Oscoda School District, and you actually got the district, including the teachers' union, to get a merit pay system in the teachers' contract up there. I know it's a modest one, and that's not all you're doing in Oscoda Schools, but let's talk about the merit pay system.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that 4 years later, and we negotiated this with our teachers unit, which is an affiliate of the National Education Association, the Michigan Education Association. 4 years later, we are seeing fantastic results. Yes, it is a very modest program, and I really think that the research here will show that educators are motivated by something other than money, but a merit plan has made huge changes and differences in everyone's behavior, not just the teachers, but in my own behavior and how we approach everything we're doing. We just examine it a little differently. So I would challenge all of those out there to think a little differently about the concept of pay for performance and maybe focus on the indicators that are maybe the recipe for a culture in education that is student-focused, professionally driven, and I think that the big difference between our model in Oscoda and the other models that are out there are high-dollar values, and when the money is gone, the motivation is gone.
Right. So talk about give us some specifics.
What's
the merit pay model that you have in Oscoda? So, and how do you measure it? Do the teachers get a bonus at the end of the year? How does it work?
Okay. The total dollar value available for the entire unit, and this year there are 86 teachers in our unit, is $25,000. It is based on a point system. So for every component of our merit pay model, you can earn up to a maximum point value in each category. And if all teachers were to earn all possible points for the year, which obviously will never happen, but we're going to strive for that, But if they were to all earn all passable points, this year the value that they could each earn is $294.12 for the whole year. The money is issued in their last payroll in June. And I can tell you, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of money. As a matter of fact, a lot of our teachers are digging deep into their pockets and pulling out that much money or more to provide sweaters and tennis shoes and hats, gloves, mittens, those types of things that people who work in education just do. We're people, and we care about the human being that we work with every day.
And, you know, that, again, you mentioned it is a modest amount.
$200,
you know, at the end of the year.
Right.
However, that modest amount, you're seeing some great return on investment, for lack of a better term, correct?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. We, our components, I guess, if you will, the aspects of our plan include teacher attendance at professional development days that are mandated by the state, teacher attendance or participation in self-directed professional development, meaning college coursework, conferences that they seek on their own time and substantially at their own expense. Participation with parents, motivating parents to get involved in parent-teacher conferences. Teachers who go above and beyond, they may do work hours after school, like office hours, availability to students. They may take tickets at an athletic event or sponsor, chair a meeting, a community-driven meeting. And obviously, their teacher performance on their own evaluation is a major component for us. 21% of the total value is performance on their evaluation, and 51% is student performance on assessments. And this means the individual teachers are looked at for their student performance on their achievement for the year on state, national, and local exams, or assessments. So. That's 51%, so obviously it's very clearly tied to student performance, but with all of the other components, it's the full package. What does a professional instructor, educator do, and what do they look like? And we measure it. We set goals, and we measure them every year.
Right, and you didn't stop with merit pay. I want to talk about your latest innovation, which is even bigger and broader, in response to Race to the Top legislation, which required some sort of a teacher evaluation program. You came up with a teacher evaluation program, which, unlike other previous methods of evaluating teachers, such as numbers of degrees a teacher has or numbers of years in a classroom, yours includes student performance, correct?
Absolutely, it does. The student achievement is incredibly important, and we wanted to find a way not only to meet the language of the law, but we wanted to do it the right way, with the right intent, and we wanted it to impact learning. And we believe that we have developed a tool that absolutely does that. It impacts learning. It's a fair tool. It's not just based on student data, but it is also based on the professional indicators of teacher quality, like planning, preparation, college coursework, the classroom environment, the whole delivery of instruction is included as well as the student data.
Right.
What is the quality of the instruction provided?
And here's what's really cool about this, and I think what our listeners may be very interested to know, is not only did you come up with this sort of teacher evaluation program, you got a computer company to create software for this evaluation program, and you even copyrighted it, so creating a revenue stream for part of the Oscoda School District, correct?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. We're, you know, I'm a firm believer that we can either take the reins of the horse and drive the horse, or we can let everybody else drive it for us. And I think that we can do a good job figuring this out. I mean, there's a reason that this requirement, that Race to the Top, that No Child Left Behind, there's a reason that those things were necessary. What we do with them and how we respond to them, I think, is the critical piece of, are we going to be at the top of the game again in education in our country or not? And my choice is to be at the top.
Right, and I know you have told me in the past that when Race to the Top legislation came around and this teacher evaluation element was bandied about, you said, I don't want the state deciding how I'm going to evaluate my teachers. I'd rather do it on a local level. And you got a team together. You got a fellow administrators, et cetera, and teachers and everybody having input, and you came up with this. And I think that's very, very commendable.
Thank you. Thank you. We're very proud of it. We know that it's going to get better. I mean, this is just year one. We implemented this evaluation process and protocol this year. So we implemented it September 1st with all educators in the district, including myself. And so year two, we think it'll be even better.
Right. And I have mentioned that you are working through the program and you understand the need for tweaking. Two questions come to mind when we're talking about this. One, any flack at all from the MEA or other teachers groups, et cetera, about either the merit pay or the teacher evaluation program?
You know, I'd have to say no flack. But what we did was we met with the MEA initially. So we met, we talked, we developed the tool, we developed the concepts and the approach, and knew why we were doing each component of what we proposed. And then I called the MEA Uniserv director and said, hey, look, I want to sit down and talk about this. And not only did our Uniserv director take the time to meet with us, but we spent about 3 hours with Dr. Frank Slosky as well as June Pettyplace. And so we took them through the process. What is our goal? What is our approach? Why are we doing each component? And I am so proud of them, because what they did was they said, you know what? You're on the right track. You probably need to look at this a little more, you know, expand on that. But they gave us some very good constructive feedback. And I think that communication piece was critical to the successful implementation and the successful continuation of the development of the tool that we have.
All right. And we're talking with Dr. Christine Beardsley, the superintendent of the Oscoda School District, up way there between Bay City and Alpena. Kind of a little off the beaten path, but you've been doing some pioneering programs, merit pay, teacher evaluation. Before we go to a commercial break, and if you could stick around, Dr. Beardsley, and perhaps if we have some listeners who would like to call in with some questions, that would be great. But very quickly, do you have other districts coming to you about, I know you're presenting this these programs around the state, other districts coming to you about either merit pay or teacher evaluation programs saying, hey, we want to do this?
Absolutely. We have worked with St. Clair ISD, their county task force. We have worked with Ann Arbor Public Schools, Mason Lake Oceana ISD. We have also, I've been contacted by AFT, American Federation of Teachers, and some of their Uniserv directors, and have helped them at least just shared what we're doing. It's very collaborative, very collegial, and so we have not been, you know, I anticipated that it might not be as well received, but it has been incredibly well received.
All right, Dr. Beardsley, if you are willing to stick around, I'm sure there are a lot of people whose heads are just spinning right now with either the concept of merit pay or making some computer software for evaluating teachers based on a variety of data. We will go to commercial break, come back, and take some of your phone calls if you'd like to ask Dr. Beardsley a question or two. 800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0WJR. Stay with us on the Frank Beckman Show on WJR.
Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show on WJR. And now, here's special guest host, Kathy Hoekstra.
Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show here on WJR. On the line with us is Dr. Christine Beardsley, who is the superintendent of the Oscoda School District, talking about some visionary forward thinking ideas that she's implemented up there in Oscoda, including a merit pay, modest merit pay system for teachers, as well as a teacher evaluation system that she has gotten computerized and copyrighted for a revenue stream for the district. And Dr. Beardsley, we did put the call out before the commercial break for anyone who is interested in asking some questions about what you have going on. Before we take any phone calls, though, 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0WJR. I do want to ask you quickly, because I do have you on the phone, and you are a superintendent of a public school district, what your thoughts are on the governor's education reform proposals. Do you have any knee-jerk reaction or any at-first blush reaction to what's on the table right now?
You know, Kathy, I think that there are some values to the proposal. I think that there are some ways that we do need to examine and look at what we're doing, how we're doing things, and the purpose behind those, maybe a little differently or maybe a little more broadly. However, there comes a point in time where you might have the best intentions, and if you cannot fund them, and I'm having to choose in our district between providing a program or a service to a child and trying to figure out how to implement some of the new things, it's really, our back is up against the wall. And so while on one hand, I think that there's a lot of motivation in school leadership, and talking with our teachers, I can tell you, we are ready and prepared to make some changes. However, that being said, there has to be a method and a mechanism to fund, adequately fund, what it is we're attempting to do. We've proven in Oscoda we can do things on a shoestring budget, and we can impact huge results on a shoestring budget. But that commitment to innovation and to development, there has to be some method and mechanism to fund some of the things that we're trying to accomplish in our state. And quite frankly, today, I can't tell you that we have the full plan laid out based on the obvious and clear reductions that schools are going to be facing. And we're a district that has been making these cuts since 1992 when the Oscoda Air Base, Fort Smith Air Base, closed. And we're not the only community that has been making cuts for such a long time that, you know, it'll be challenging. I will commit to you. We know we will do it. We're just not exactly sure what might get lost in the process.
Okay. So, again, you talk about being innovative, and you certainly have taken the lead on innovative efforts in Oscoda schools, and I'm sure budget-wise, no different as well. And you mentioned, yeah, the closing of the airbase up there, huge, huge local revenue loss for you folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, but I'll tell you, we're not a bunch of whiners up here. We're a bunch of people who decide that we're going to do it, we're going to make it work, we're going to link arms and make it happen. It might be able to happen a little quicker. It might be able to happen a little differently, but we're going to solve the problem.
All right, we do have one phone call, Dr. Beardsley. We have Richard from Clinton Township on the line with Dr. Christine Beardsley of Oscoda Schools. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. My comment is that, you know, they blame the teachers for all the students that are doing bad in school, but we forget, no matter how good a teacher is, when these students go home and they don't have any cooperation or any guidance from their parents, all they learned in school can be taken away by the time they get home. When they go back the next day, they start all over again. There's more to it than just the teachers. There's a lot that has to do with the parents at home.
Richard,
that's my major concern about all that.
Richard, I absolutely agree with you that there is more than half of their waking hours that they're not with us. And but in Oscoda, we've determined that while they are with us, we are going to be fully responsible for what they learn, and we are going to try to meet all of those needs. And you make some very valid points. There's no question that that their home environment plays an indicator and plays a factor. But there is also research that tells us that within the school setting, and I mean outside of the home environment, but within the school setting, the number one indicator of a student's achievement is the teacher's ability to teach, the teacher's knowledge or belief of their own ability to teach, and the teacher's knowledge and belief in that student's ability to learn. And so we really focus on that, but you make some very valid points.
All right, Richard, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it this morning. And Dr. Beardsley, go figure. Now the phone calls are all starting to come in when we do need to let you go and take some commercial breaks. But Dr. Christine Beardsley, superintendent of Oscoda Schools, doing some great forward-thinking things up there in Oscoda. We appreciate you being with us today, and keep us posted as to how the teacher evaluation program's working out, the merit pay system, and all the other neat things I'm sure you're going to come up with.
Oh, thank you very much, Kathy. It was a pleasure.
All right, thank you. Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank Beckman on WJR. And from the WJR Weather Center forecast from meteorologist John McMurray today, we're looking at a high near 70, lots of sunshine, partly cloudy tonight, low 50 to 52 tomorrow. We'll have some sunshine, a few late day showers, high 70 to 72. And for Wednesday, the warm temperatures continue, 75 to 78 the high, showers and some thunderstorms. Right now, we have partly cloudy skies. Actually looks sunny to me now that I look out the window. 61 degrees, warming up quickly here on a Monday morning. And getting off the phone with Dr. Beardsley from the Oscoda School District, doing some innovative things up there. We did get a message from Twitter. Oscoda, too bad other public service departments can't follow in the same path. And why does it always require a doctor to implement ideas? I don't think it always necessarily involves a doctor to implement great ideas, but point well taken. Dr. Beardsley, definitely a visionary up there, and I think she's going to cause the start of some changes in the education in Michigan in a positive way. Still to come on the Frank Beckman Show, former Congressman Pete Hoekstra will be on with us to talk about get his take on the whole Osama bin Laden thing. Of course, you'll remember he was the chairman of the House Subcommittee on Intelligence during his time in Washington, deeply immersed in these issues. And he'll answer the burning question of the day. Well, I actually question I've gotten for much longer than that, if Kathy Hoekstra and Congressman Pete Hoekstra are any relation. Stay tuned. This is the Frank Beckman Show on WJR.
Glad you could join us. Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show on WJR. And now, here's special guest host, Kathy Hoekstra.
You know, I think I'm really going to like this gig. Engineer Rob is playing the coolest music leading into this. Again, Kathy Hoekstra of the Mackinac Center taking the morning off to fill in for Frank Beckman, who's out on the golf course this morning. Our next guest on the line, former congressman. Other titles include chairman and ranking member of the House Permanent Committee on Intelligence, Michigan gubernatorial candidate, possible U.S. Senate candidate, now holds the private sector title of, quote, visiting distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation, focusing on education reform. Other titles that have been tossed around, my younger brother, my husband, or my dad. We welcome Pete Hoekstra to the Frank Beckman Show. Good morning, Pete.
Hey, good morning, Kathy.
Well, before we get to the real burning question of our possible relationship or not, I want to start with Osama bin Laden. Given your position as chairman and ranking member, again, of the House Permanent Committee on Intelligence, you were privy to a lot of the intelligence about bin Laden that we were not. Let me ask you, did the end for bin Laden play out the way you would have thought based on what you knew while you were serving on the committee?
Well, I think it really did. Other than the location being in a major metropolitan area, I think many of us expected that we would probably find him somewhere in the ungoverned tribal areas of Pakistan. That didn't happen, but I always expected that that we would find him. He would make a mistake, or our intelligence would just get so much better that eventually we would catch a pattern, but that ultimately we would find him. I think the other thing, and I give President Obama a tremendous amount of credit for this, I always thought that, I was briefed on this in August, the current location and where we ultimately found him and killed him. I expected that we would do it with an aerial attack, with a couple of precision-guided missiles or bombs. I was quite surprised that we went in with troops. It's a very risky endeavor to send boots on the ground that far into Pakistan. But the troops performed marvelously. They carried out their mission. They got the proof that bin Laden was actually killed, which we wouldn't have had with a bomb and aerial attack. So, expected. I was hoping it happened a long time ago, but it's done.
That was my next question. If you wish it would have happened on your watch. Photos, what's your opinion on these? Should we be allowed to see them?
Well, do you want them come out? Do you want them to come out from WikiLeaks, or do you want them to come out from the U.S. government in a manner that we think is appropriate for what those photographs may show? It's my belief that, it's been proven time and time again that intelligence information that's been gathered, that eventually that stuff is going to leak out. Put the information out, put it out in a way that you manage the message, you control the content, rather than, some private first class releasing it maybe in 2 or 3 years, but, get it out,
get it out in a controlled message, and it's over with.
Okay. Next, I think the big burning question, Bin Laden, did he have Pakistani support network? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Sure. I mean, he's got a Pakistani support network. The question is, how far up into the current government does that network go? All the indications that I have and everything that I've learned about Pakistan is that, you know, sometimes they're a great ally, sometimes they're mediocre, but I don't believe in the case of Bin Laden that they had, that we had people in the higher echelons of the Pakistani government that were helping Bin Laden. I just find that very, very difficult to believe.
Okay. Now, I want to switch gears very briefly to education. You were also a high-ranking member on the House Education and Labor Committee. You did some work to try to tweak No Child Left Behind and some other reforms. Have you seen or heard of Governor Snyder's proposals for education reform in Michigan and what's going through the legislature, and what are your thoughts on these?
Well, I've seen some of it. I think it's moving in the direction. It's moving in the correct direction, but I would like proposals that allow for much more parental choice. I mean, that's really what I'm working with and for the Heritage Foundation, is to drive parental choice in education. Ultimately, that will be what really turns the education system around. I think Governor Snyder has some initiatives, but, you know, you and I have talked about this before. The Mackinac Center has one of the best proposals out there with the tuition tax credits. You know, when you've got environments like what's going on in Detroit, where we're graduating somewhere between one out of four, one out of two kids, that's totally unacceptable. We need massive educational reform. We're not getting it yet in the state of Michigan. It will happen. It's happening in states around the country. It's happening in Indiana. It's happening in Florida. It's happening in Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan. This is really an opportunity where we could step up, join those leading-edge states to bring real education reform into our state.
You know, you mentioned Indiana, and I wanted to bring that up with you. It is just clear the Indiana legislature headed to Governor Mitch Daniels' desk. Huge efforts. One, the Indiana House okayed a voucher, most broad private school voucher program in the nation, and another bill on charter schools. Now, Governor Snyder said during his campaign that he looks up to Governor Mitch Daniels. Should he be looking to him for this as well?
I think so. And like I said, I prefer education tax credits versus vouchers. But either one empowers parents. You know, again, Michigan and other states, they're tinkering around the edges. You know, they're going to do teacher tenure reform and those types of things. Well, the best way to have, you know, to reform tenure is to make sure that these teachers are providing a product that customers actually want to buy, that parents are saying, I'm going to put my kids into these schools because the teachers and the administrators in this school are providing a high-quality education that I want my kids to take advantage of. And if they don't, the kids go to another school, and guess what? Teacher tenure doesn't matter because they'll no longer be employed, not because some arbitrary standard has been applied to them, but because parents have taken their kids and put them in another school.
Absolutely. You know, we do need to take a commercial break. Pete Hoekstra, if you'll stick around, we do have some more business to take care of. And I do want to go back to the Osama bin Laden thing real quick. Another question came into my head. So stay with us here on the Frank Beckman Show. Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank, talking with Pete Hoekstra. We'll be right back. This is WJR. Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show. Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank on this beautiful Monday morning. On the line with us, former Congressman Pete Hoekstra, who spent some time working in Washington as the chairman and ranking member of the House Permanent Committee on Intelligence. In the previous segment, we touched a little bit of, upon Osama bin Laden and the situation, the killing of Osama bin Laden, et cetera. I did have a question roll in from somebody, and I want to ask you, Pete, why not capture Osama alive?
Well, I think, you know, technically speaking, and American value speaking, the answer is we I'm assuming we did try to capture Osama bin Laden alive. Whether that was with a wink and a nod or whatever, but I'm assuming that that was the director's directive. Capture him alive if you can. If you can't, then take the action necessary to kill him. Now, remember, if we would have captured him, on the way out the door, under this administration, we would have read him his Miranda rights and said, we're not going to question you. So the interrogation value from capturing bin Laden would have been minimal, if anything at all. I mean, this president has, you know, said we will not use any enhanced interrogation techniques. So by not capturing him, we did not lose any intelligence. And so, you know, that I think is the problem. But, you know, it's one of the ironies. This president apparently has no trouble dropping drone and, you know, bombs from unmanned aerial predators on groups of people sitting in, by press reports, in Afghanistan and Pakistan, or sending a team in to kill bin Laden. But in none of these cases will he allow enhanced interrogation techniques. And he's still, Eric Holder is still considering prosecuting the CIA folks that did the enhanced interrogations that allowed the president to have such a success a week and a half ago. It's one of the true inconsistencies of this administration.
Right, right. Well, we'll leave that on that note. I do want to switch gears to a topic a lot of people do wonder about. That is, if you and I have a familial connection. Brooks Patterson, you'll recall, didn't help matters. If you remember the debate on Mackinac Island with you and the other Republican contenders for governor, he referred to you as my husband. And just to let you know, Pete, I do get a lot of holiday wishes on Facebook for you and me of saying, hey, you know, happy holidays to you and your family. But then you chimed in and said, I'm your older sister. Which, you know, at when I'm perpetually 24, so everybody knows that's not true. But I got to tell you, my favorite was an email that I got as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request in that daycare unionization case. Remember, you introduced a federal bill to keep states from classifying self-employed folks as government employees. Now, I just want to read very quickly an email that was sent out from the UAW to the SEIU, Ask Me, and the former Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council. Of course, the Mackinac Center deeply immersed in that. The subject line said, quote, surprise, Hoekstra attacks us. And, of course, that caught my eye. And then goes on to read, this isn't surprising since Hoekstra's daughter works for the Mackinac Center and is their lead investigator on this issue. So I think we need to set the record straight before any other communications roll around like that. I should have tried to set up for a drum roll.
Yeah.
Kind of pretend. Now, for the record, I am the daughter of a Pete Hoekstra from Grand Rapids, Michigan, but not you. You and I are not related at all. Is this correct?
That is absolutely correct. And in a greater irony, I have a sister-in-law named Kathy Hoekstra.
Oh my goodness!
The Kathy Hoekstra at the Mackinac Center and the old retired congressman, we are not related at all.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking the time to clear that up for us and for our listeners, and maybe some of those angry union folks tuned in as well and won't make the same mistake where they want to write angry emails about us. So we definitely appreciate that. But I do have to say, Hoekstra is my maiden name, which I kept for professional purposes. So it is a great conversation starter, if anything.
Yep.
And
but we are great friends.
Absolutely. And I would imagine that you get at least twice as many people asking if you're related to the Kathy Hoekstra, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And, we'll talk about this next time. Last week I was the answer on a Jeopardy question.
Oh, you were? Oh, we're going to have
yes.
to dig that up. That's fantastic. Well,
yeah.
I think you are going to be the answer for Frank Beckman when he returns here to WJR. He teased last week this was going to be a trivia question. So there you have it, faithful listeners of the Frank Beckman Show. Pete Hoekstra and I, not at all related. Well, former Congressman Pete Hoekstra, again, not related to me in any way, shape, or form. We appreciate you taking time to join us on the program, debunk some of the Hoekstra mystique, and share your thoughts with us about Osama bin Laden and education reform. I hope you take care.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. Always good to be with you.
All right. And this is the Frank Beckman Show on WJR. Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show. Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank Beckman. Still to come on the show, we're going to be talking with Henry Payne from the Michigan View and the Detroit News. Also, author of the Chillers series, Jonathan Rand. And also, king of the new media, Andrew Breitbart. Hope you can stick around. This is the Frank Beckman Show on WJR.